Good evening and welcome. It's good to have everybody here. I appreciate your attendance, and I feel this meeting has been very well attended. I'm very thankful. What am I forgetting? This one on? Off. That made it worse. Oh, don't just push the button. Behold what I can do. All right. Well, it is good seeing everybody here, and I do believe that this has been a well-attended meeting, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for your attention and your desire to study God's Word. And I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's lesson. Tomorrow night's lesson, we're going to end with a ridiculously good news message. But tonight's message isn't that. Tonight's message is not a feel-good sermon. It is, in fact, a tragedy. It is a sad story. It is, I believe, perhaps the greatest tragedy, the saddest story within the Scriptures, within all of humanity. And it's the story of Judas. His life is exceptionally sad. And it is a warning to all of us. I will defend my statement of his being the saddest life of all in just a moment, but let's look at his life just briefly here. And we go over to Matthew chapter 10. Whether you're looking at Matthew, Mark, or Luke, we don't get a lot of information about Judas. He just shows up on the scene. We don't know what it was that made him start following Jesus. We don't know how he was introduced to Jesus. We don't know very much about him at all. We're first introduced to him when Jesus takes all of his multiple disciples and picks 12 of them to be his apostles. And so in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, he starts listing out the 12 apostles, and last of all is always Judas. And he says in verse 2, "Now the names of the 12 apostles..." No, you know what? I want to read verse 1. "Jesus summoned his 12 disciples, and he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness for everyone except Judas." And that's not what that says, is it? He gave that to all of them. "Now the names of the 12 apostles are these," and you notice we're not going to get a lot of information about them here. Just a bit here and there. Families, a lot of it, but "The first, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him." For all eternity, that's who he is. That's his identity. Judas lived a life previous to this moment. He did so many things that we don't know about. He might have done amazing things, but none of it matters. Because all that he is, all that he is known for is, he's the one. He's the one who betrayed Jesus. Well, if we go down to Matthew chapter 26, we see that moment when he makes this decision. Matthew 26 and verse 14, it says, "Then one of the 12, named Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, 'What are you willing to give me to betray him to you?' And they weighed out 30 pieces of silver to him. From then on, he began looking for a good opportunity to betray Jesus." Why were they willing to give him money for that? They had a problem. The Jewish leadership did not like Jesus. They were determined to kill Jesus, but they couldn't do it publicly. They couldn't arrest him in front of everybody. It would cause a riot and they would lose their position. So they had this problem. And if you go back up to verse 3 of Matthew 26, it says, "Then the chief priests and the elders of the people were gathered together in the court of the high priest named Caiaphas. And they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they were saying, 'Not during the festival, otherwise a riot might occur among the people.'" So they have Jesus right within their grasp. They have this limited amount of time, because in about a week, everybody's going to be leaving. And they can't do it publicly. So they know what they want to do and they can't figure out how to do it. And then lo and behold, here comes a man who says, give me some money and I will do it for you. I will show you where he will be in private. As it turns out, I'll show you where he will be in the middle of the night. And so Judas has made his decision, and from that moment on, he is watching. He's looking. Is this the moment? Is this the place? Is this where I will capture Jesus for the Jewish leadership? Well, in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 47, finally the time has come. Jesus has observed the Passover. He has sent Judas off. Well, that was fortuitous. He sent Judas off and now Judas can go get them. He knows exactly where Jesus is going to be. And so that's what he does. And so it says in verse 47, now this is after Jesus has been in the Garden of Gethsemane and he has been praying and he's been praying multiple times, begging God, let this cup pass from me. He has been in intense moments for his life. Saying the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I'm at the point of death here. And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up accompanied by a large crowd with swords and clubs, who came up from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he who was betraying him gave them a sign, saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him. Immediately Judas went up to Jesus and said, hail, Rabbi, and kissed him. And Jesus said to him, friend, do what you have come for. Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. And then in Matthew chapter 27, what follows from there through the night, and we don't know where Judas went. Was he there in the courts? Did he watch as Jesus was being lied about, as Jesus was being punched? Did he see Jesus get scourged? We don't know. But he followed the events. He knew the outcome. So Matthew 27 verse 1 says, now when the morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people conferred together against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him to Pilate the governor. Then when Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned, he felt remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. But they said, what is that to us? See to that yourself. And he threw the pieces of silver into the temple sanctuary and departed, and he went away and hanged himself. I don't know what Judas expected to happen. But when he sees what did happen and what he had caused, he had regrets. He hung himself, but it is not till we get to Acts chapter 1 that we see the full gruesome end of his life. In Acts chapter 1, verse 18 and 19 is a parenthesis. It says, now this man acquired a field with the price of his wickedness, and falling headlong, he burst open in the middle, and all his intestines gushed out. And it became known to all who were living in Jerusalem, so that in their own language that field was called Hakeldama, that is, field of blood. And I observe from this that what Judas did was well known. Everybody heard about it. And everybody heard about his end. And they remembered that piece of land for Judas. But it is what Jesus said when he was instituting the Lord's Supper. In Matthew chapter 26 and verse 24, Jesus allows them to know something is coming. One of you is going to betray me. He says, the Son of Man is to go, just as is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born. And that's the great tragedy. Do you understand that sentence? It would have been better off if he'd never been born. There's so much about Judas I don't know. I make some assumptions. I think they're reasonable assumptions. I assume he had parents. I don't think he came through some miraculous means. I think he had a mom and a dad. I don't know if they were around all of his life, and I tell you, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter how loving his parents were. It was all a waste. All the time that they spent changing his diaper, sacrificing to prepare meals for him, taking care of him when he was crying. All the time they spent making sure he got an education, every moment they spent on him was wasted by one decision. All the time Jesus spent on him was wasted by one decision. And that is a tremendous tragedy. Why is it so sad? Well, I think what makes his life so sad, besides the fact that what he did was really, really awful, it's the context in which he did it. I mean, if this had been one of the Roman guards who had betrayed Jesus, a Roman guard happens to see Jesus off in the garden, sees him alone, runs over to the Jews and says, "There he is." That would be a betrayal. That would be a mankind doing something terrible, but it just wouldn't compare to being Judas. What made it so terrible for Judas is he had so much potential for good. So much potential. Of all the world, some people were choosing to follow Jesus. Of all the people that were choosing to follow Jesus, Jesus chose 12. He picked 12 of them, and he did not pick Judas to fail. He did not go through and say, "Well, here's Peter, he's going to be a good apostle. Here's Andrew and James and John." He didn't go through all of them and say, "They're going to be good apostles," and then say, "All right, that's 11, and now I need one bad one," and he picked Judas. That's not how it worked. It says for us in Mark chapter 3, Mark chapter 3 and verse 13 and 14, "He went up on the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted. And they came to him, and he appointed 12 so that they would be with him and that he could send them out to preach." He picked them not to fail. He picked them to be with him. He picked them because he wanted them, and he picked them with a job to do. And then what he says in John chapter 6 and verse 70, Jesus answered them, "Did I myself not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is a devil?" Do you hear in that? He's not saying, "Did I not pick you guys and one of you I picked to be the devil?" That's not what he's saying. "I picked you, and somehow, despite the fact that I picked you, one of you is going to be the devil." Judas was picked to be a leader of Christianity. Picked to be a person who would go out and save souls, hundreds of souls, no, thousands of souls, thousands upon thousands of souls were supposed to come as a result of his work. So much potential for what he could have done. And there was so much potential in the way that he lived. Again, there's a lot I don't know. But I know Judas had to have lived in such a way that people didn't see this coming. You know, in John, it's amazing to me how this works. And it tells me that Judas really, really had to have pulled the wool over everybody's eyes in one way or another. Because in John chapter 13, verse 21, this is again the scene of the institution of the Lord's Supper. Jesus has just informed them, "One of you is going to betray me." And when Jesus had said this, he became troubled in spirit and testified and said, "Truly, truly, I say to you that one of you will betray me." And the disciples began looking at Judas. That's not what it says. None of them turned to say, "Oh, one of us is going to betray him. It's Judas. Obviously, it's Judas." They don't think that at all. Boy, do they not think that. Watch what happens. "There was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. So Simon Peter gestured to him and said to him, 'Tell us who it is of whom he is speaking.' He, leaning back thus on Jesus' bosom, said to him, 'Lord, who is it?' Jesus then answered, 'That is the one for whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to them.' So when he had dipped the morsel, he took it and gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. After the morsel, Satan then entered into him. Therefore Jesus said to him, 'What you do, do quickly.' Now, no one of those reclining at the table knew for what purpose he said this to him. For some were supposing, because Judas had the money box, that Jesus was saying to him, buy the things we have need of for the feast, or else that he should give something to the poor. You get that? They say, all right, Jesus, who's going to betray you? Judas says, all right, now watch. I'm going to take this. I'm going to dip it. I'm going to hand it to the one. Hands it to Judas. It says, Judas, you go do what you're going to do quickly. And they were like, yeah, but who is it? They still didn't grasp it. How righteous, how faithful must Judas have been up to this point that they, in such an obvious circumstance, still didn't get it? And did you notice, he was the one of the 12 that they trusted to carry the money. And he was the one of the 12 in Mark chapter 6. And there's one bit of information. There's a lot of information in the Bible I wish we had. But one additional one is, I wish I knew what the pairs were, because Jesus sends them off in pairs. One person got paired up with Judas. And he did not look over and say, it's this guy, he's going to betray him. Jesus sends out the 12, and he sends them out in pairs, and he sends them out to go preach the message. And so in Mark chapter 6 and verse 7, it says, and he summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs and gave them authority over the unclean spirits. Down in verse 12, it says, they went out and preached that men should repent. It does not say Judas was excluded. Judas was going from town to town along with some other apostle, and he was telling everybody the Messiah is coming, it's time to repent. More than that, if you look at the next verse, 13, and they were casting out many demons and were anointing with oil many sick people and healing them. It does not say, except for Judas. There was no indication that Judas wasn't one of them. Judas wasn't doing the things they were doing. Judas is out preaching, and Judas is performing miracles. There were people who had demons cast out from them by the work of Judas. There were people who were healed of their illnesses by the work of Judas. And in John chapter 6, in that passage in verse 70, where it talked about Jesus saying, did I not pick one of you? Think about that circumstance. In John chapter 6, Jesus has taught something really, really difficult. He has told them, my flesh is true food, my blood is true drink, you need it to have eternal life. And it was so complicated, so difficult, that many of the disciples, the people who had been following Jesus, quit following Jesus, but not Judas. Judas didn't quit. And it's not because Judas understood. I don't think any of the apostles understood. But they just didn't quit. And then you think about everything he witnessed. He witnessed Jesus resurrect people from the dead. He witnessed Jesus casting out demons and healing all sorts of illnesses. He witnessed Jesus walk on water and stop a storm with just a word. And then chose to betray him. Of all the world at that time, Judas was one of the 12 I had the highest expectations of. So when I say that it was a great waste, it's because he had more potential than anyone. He had seen more. He had done more. And it didn't stop him. It's a tragedy because he held to his evil intent. He set his mind to do this, and he did it. And that's a tragedy. It wasn't just some accident. It was a mindful thing, looking for opportunity. And he did it despite seemingly getting caught. When I was younger, one of the rebellious things I did was one time I did smoke a cigarette. Now, how that happened is incredibly disgusting because my friend and I found a pack of cigarettes in a parking lot on the ground. And we were like, yeah, we'll smoke that. Who cared where it was from or anything like that. And so I went to his house and we shared half a cigarette. I wasn't able to inhale it, not because I was somehow more righteous. I just couldn't inhale. I could only suck the thing. And then he gave me my own cigarette. And I took it home and I hid it. And I was a lot like Judas because I was waiting for the opportunity. I was waiting for that day when my parents would leave me and I would be all alone and I could smoke this cigarette. And one day it came and my parents left. And my plan was coming to fruition. And so I took the cigarette and I knew I was dumb, but I wasn't so dumb as to smoke it in the house. I'm like, I got to take this outside. So I was going to smoke it in the backyard. The wind would take care of it. No problem. I'm standing in the garage to go to that backside door and the garage door started opening. My parents were coming home. I snapped it in half, hid it, threw it away, never ever touched another cigarette. I'm so thankful because it was over 10 years before I lost the taste for the one that I'd only sucked. That stuff's addictive. It's terrible. I almost got caught and that made me not do it. Now Judas is thinking, how can I betray Jesus? How can I betray Jesus? How can I betray Jesus? And then Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me. And he still did it. He's caught. Can you imagine what his heart would have done at that moment? Oh no. But he still did it. Imagine that moment when he's at Jerusalem and Jesus curses a fig tree and it dies. Now that was different. Jesus had illustrated a tremendous amount of power. He had the power to save people. He had the power to bring people back from the dead. He had the power to walk on water. But this was the time he showed he had the power to hurt. And Judas still did it. And it's not like Judas is going to leave this place and right next door is where the Jewish leadership is. I don't know how far he had to walk, but when I walk, I clear my mind. I think more clearly. He is now walking from where Jesus is, having nearly been caught. Jesus has even said, I know who did it. Here, I don't think the other disciples figured it out, but you think Judas did? Like, he knows. And now he's walking for who knows how far, and all that while, he doesn't talk himself out of it. He goes straight to them. He says, I know where he's at. And now they have to walk back, and he still doesn't talk himself out of it. He still could have done something else, but no. He comes and he finds Jesus, and immediately, without any hesitation, runs right up to him and kisses him. And that's not to mention the fact that throughout the Scriptures, one of the things that's mentioned in the Gospels is Jesus knowing their thoughts. He's watched that, and now here he is thinking, how can I betray Jesus? What a tragedy. And then his betrayal was just so personal. What it said in Mark chapter 3 was that Jesus picked the ones he wanted. Judas was one that Jesus wanted. Judas is the one that Jesus is going to call friend. And Judas, you know, he could have said to the Jewish leadership, all right, I know where he is, pull out a map. I'll point to the spot on the map. You go there and you will find him. But I don't want to be there. But that's not what he does. He leads them. He gets as close physically possible to Jesus, kisses him to betray him. That's what makes it so terrible. Somebody so close doing this in such an intimate, awful way. And what makes it so terrible is the aftermath. His death is gruesome. Yeah, that's pretty bad. That's not really what I'm talking about. The betrayer was betrayed. by everything he held on to. He went to the Jewish leadership and said, "How much? How much will you give me?" And for 30 pieces of silver, he was willing to betray Jesus. And those 30 pieces of silver betrayed him. Because when he was done, he didn't think this was worth it. Those 30 pieces of silver did not ease his conscience. We read in Matthew chapter 27 in verse 3 that he was filled with regret. He's holding the money and he doesn't care. The money didn't buy him happiness. The money didn't make it worth it. And in the end, he threw the money away. The money betrayed him. His new friends betrayed him. Judas had family. I don't know if he had parents. I don't know if he had brothers or sisters. But for the previous 3 years, he knew who he was going to eat with. He knew who he belonged with. He knew who he would get in the boat with. He knew if he was going to travel, who he would travel with. He had family. He had 11 brothers. And he had Jesus, who was as wonderful as they can be. And he set them all aside so that he could join the Jewish leadership. And do you remember what it said in Matthew chapter 27? He comes to them and he is distraught. He says, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." But they said, "What is that to us?" He betrayed Jesus for people who didn't care about him. They didn't care how he was feeling. They didn't care about what he was thinking about doing. They didn't care. He had been their hero. He had solved their problem. They had no solution and he just walked right up. But they didn't care about him. You want to know who else betrayed him? Satan. I don't know exactly how this all worked. Judas is accountable for his behavior. Judas betrayed Jesus. But he didn't do it alone. Multiple times it talks about Satan getting involved in this process. And in John chapter 13 and verse 2, "During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him." And Satan's got this idea. Satan's nudging him. Satan's encouraging him. I don't know exactly how. It doesn't make Judas innocent, but Satan's there using Judas. And then again in John 13 and verse 27, after Jesus hands the morsel to Judas, it says, "After the morsel, Satan then entered into him." And so now once again, it is not just Judas. It is Judas and Satan off to betray Jesus. Judas is Satan's tool. Judas is Satan's hero. The hero to capture the Son of God. And what does Satan do for Judas afterwards? Does he say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. I will give you money. I will give you women. I will give you power." He could do all those things. He offered Jesus the world. And now Judas has served him and he gives him nothing. He has manipulated Judas, manipulated the way that Judas is thinking, and now Judas is thinking about killing himself, and Satan's nowhere around to say, "No, don't do that." Betrayed by everything he had just embraced. Money, people, and Satan. And yes, yes, he had a gruesome death. But step aside, step back from what he did. Step back from that one decision, that horrible, horrible decision, and just look at this man and tell me you do not feel some pity for him. He is distraught. He is suicidal. He is desperate. He is alone. and he is hopeless. And then he is dead. But that's not the end, is it? Suicide sometimes seems like an answer, but it's not. It is not an escape. He's at a point where he can't live with himself. He can't live with what he's done, and so he kills himself. But what's next? What comes after that? He's going to come to the judgment seat of Christ, the very one he betrayed. No escape. Judas is a warning to us to not embrace the things that are going to betray you. To not embrace money and people and all the offerings of Satan. They won't be there for you. They won't deliver you. They don't care. Interestingly, Judas is actually one of the proofs of Jesus. Have you ever thought about that? If there was anyone in the world who had the opportunity to disprove Jesus, to tell you that his miracles were actually a trick, to tell people, here's what he actually thinks, here's what he actually does. If there was anybody who could go out and undermine the work of Jesus, it was Judas. Because he was with him the whole time, and he could tell them the tricks, he could tell them the fakeness of it, but he doesn't do that, does he? Even when he's betraying Jesus, he only proves Jesus. Because he does not then dedicate his life saying, I realize now that Jesus is a charlatan, and I'm going to dedicate my life to make sure nobody makes the same mistake I did. I'm going to make it to where nobody follows Jesus, because I will shout on the mountaintops, he is a fake, he is a fake, follow God, not this man. But he doesn't do that. He regrets betraying him. He doesn't come to the chief priest and tell them he is a charlatan. And you know what he does? He tells them, I betrayed innocent blood. He is what he says he is. He is not a blasphemer. He is the Son of God. The greatest advocate, the greatest enemy is actually proof. Because of the way he behaves in response and the things he doesn't say. That's interesting to me. So what can we learn from Judas? What can we learn from this? Well, I think obviously, absolutely anyone can fall away. Don't think that an elder of the church can't fall away, or a preacher can't fall away. Don't think that somebody who's been faithful for a really long time can't fall away. I don't know that anybody's going to compare to Judas. To doing the things like the miracles that he had done, the preaching that he had done, that personal impact, that personal relationship with Jesus that he had had. And yet he fell away. Now, I don't want you to get too discouraged, because we could balance this. We could look at it any which way. You could look at the 11 and say, look, we can do this. The 11 are not that remarkable. They're fishermen. And yet Jesus teaches them, and they have all sorts of errors, but they finish. They become what Jesus wants them to become. They grow to become these amazing men, these amazing apostles. We can do it. But we should also look at Judas and say, but we might not. We've got to balance it. Now that's true for two ways. That's one is you can fall away, and the other one is anybody you put your faith and confidence in the church can fall away, which leads very much to the second one. And not everyone who is in the church is following with a pure heart. There is a period of time in which Judas is following the other disciples, but his whole thought is, how can I betray Jesus? I wish that wasn't the case, but there can be people in the church that are not there to worship God. They're not there to please Him. They may very well be thinking, what can I do to destroy? What can I do to cause trouble? What can I do to hurt this person? You gotta be on our guard, even in our family. We really need to learn this. We live in a wealthy society, but we need to learn that the love of money is absolutely devastating to a people of faith. Because I have no other answer for why Judas did what he did other than money. In John 12, in verse 3, it says, Mary then took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, now other accounts of this just say the disciples or one of the disciples, and it doesn't tell us who. It's John who says, you should know who it was. It was Judas who objected. Here's this woman who is putting perfume on Jesus. She is glorifying him and worshiping him. And Judas objects. Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, who was intending to betray him, said, why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and given to poor people? Now he said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as he had the money box, he used to pilfer what was put into it. Therefore Jesus said, let her alone so that she may keep it for the day of my burial, for you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. Matthew's account words it differently. Judas says, why this waste? The love of money had tainted his way of thinking to where he no longer saw Jesus as worthy of perfume. But money spent on him was a waste. And in Matthew's account, what follows immediately after this is when he goes and says, all right, how much? How much will you give me? He saw this money wasted, and then he goes and he finds another source. I cannot tell you how much money can taint the way we think. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, it says, make sure that your character is free from the love of money. The responsibility falls upon us. Make certain that in our life in which we are surrounded by money and have this compelling need for money, we need money for food, we need money to pay bills, and I'm not going to argue with it. We should have jobs, we should pay for things, but we've got to make certain it doesn't reach our heart. We've got to make certain that our heart is free from the love of money. We were told in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and Judas is just an illustration of it as near as I can tell. We were told those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. That isn't, of course, saying that everything that is evil is done because of money, but it is saying that the love of money will lead to anything, even betraying the Son of God. The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And you think about Judas. And you think about the way he was at the very end. How did he get there? And sadly, what Judas tells us is our life can be an absolute, unequivocal, total waste. Everything. Everything your parents did for you, everything you went through, everything you sacrificed, everything you endured can all be wasted. Now, we don't get quite the same language that Jesus used for Judas. It would have been better off if he had never been born, but we get some similar language. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? What is he saying there? It's the same thing. If you live in this life and you gain absolutely everything but lose your soul, your life was a waste. All the things you did and all the things you accomplished can't make up for the ultimate failure of your soul. Or if you look at Matthew chapter 18, starting in verse 5, Jesus says, "Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea." Now that's a little bit different, but isn't it awfully similar? It's not quite as bad. It's not saying it's better if you'd never been born, but he's saying it's better you weren't alive right now. And that's if we're going around causing trouble and making other Christians fall away. Or in 2 Peter chapter 2, in verse 20, it says, "For if after they have escaped the defilements of the world by the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and are overcome, the last state has become worse for them than the first. It would be better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having known it to turn away from the holy commandment handed on to them." Now, it's not saying exactly the same thing, but isn't it? Don't be Judas. So many people have done so much for you. God has done so much for you. But if we don't make it to heaven, it doesn't matter what you did, what you accomplished. It doesn't matter what people did for you or what you did for others. In the end, if you don't make it to heaven, it was a waste. It wasn't worth it. And I would remind you that we don't want to put our trust, our lives, our heart, into that which will betray us. But the last thing I want to consider, and I'm sure it's been stated many times before, is that Judas is not the only one who made a horrible decision that night. Judas betrayed Jesus. Peter denied him 3 times. Peter and Judas both are weeping. They are both saddened by what they've done. So what makes the difference? Judas quit and Peter didn't. Peter, there was no hiding what he'd done. But he was there when Jesus was resurrected. He was there when Jesus sent them out. Peter didn't quit. So if we've done those terrible things, if we've made that mistake, you're not alone. And we should weep. But don't quit. Don't become Judas. What a sad, sad story he is. But have you ever thought about the reverse? It's not in my notes. I hadn't thought about it till I was just sitting here before we started singing. That statement from Jesus, "It would have been better if he'd never been born." What's the statement for anyone who makes it to heaven? It would have been a shame if they hadn't been born. And whatever they've endured and whatever they've gone through, was absolutely worth it. Don't be Judas. Be one of the 11. I thank you for your time and for your attention. We give you an opportunity to become a Christian, to dedicate your life to Him, following Him. You can be baptized into Jesus this evening. If you're a Christian and you have fallen away, don't ignore that sin. Don't hold on to that sin. Come back. Don't quit. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?